fun, sneaky cat's feet. Your conscience comes creeping to the room. Rolls around on the rug and scratches itself. Yes, you'll notice it has tiny, bloodshot, beady eyes. And tiny cat's feet. Your conscience yawns lazily. Eats a little of the Fritos left over from last night's TV watch. And goes quietly sauntering out into the yard. On tiny cat's feet. Your conscience. Don't write in and ask me, where did I get that? I invented it myself. That was me. That was me. And, speaking of inventions here, tonight, special night, it's really in midsummer and all, you know. And tonight I'd like to salute, if I may, I'd like to take a little time out here, summertime, to point out that even though it is summertime, world of the student continues unabated. You are aware of that, right? Well, for example, we have a note here from Milano, Italy. Engineering students at Milan's Polytechnic Institute walked out on a math test because it was too tough. So you see, it's happening everywhere. We'd also like to salute the students in Santiago, Chile. 50 school children aged between 14 and 15 went on strike, demanding the right to smoke. In class, they locked themselves in a high school, leaving teachers and 2,350 other children out on the street. Going to smoke in class, 14-year-old. Well, it's happening everywhere. And so tonight, it's student night here on our little ding-dong. And I just want you to listen very carefully because we have something very special for you, speaking of the student. And would you please sneak in that music for me? That's something I want to read to you now, and I want you to listen. Take the potatoes out of your ears and sit up for a change. Pull your gut. The average American boy is splendid material. But in the rough, he is conspicuous neither for order, system, nor respect for authority. The military system supplies the most effective remedy for these defects. Effective because the remedy is sugar-coated. What boy with red blood in his veins is there who does not feel a thrill at the tap of the drum or the sound of the trumpet, who does not delight to handle a rifle, or who does not simply glory in popping away with blank cartridges at an imaginary enemy in an infantry skirmish? Or if he is proof against these, who will not yield to the dashing interest of the mounted cavalry exercise? Or to the artillery drill with its fascinating suggestions of power. What other method is there that will so surely and so quickly make the unpunctual boy on time to the dot, the untidy boy neat and trim, the bashful boy confident and assertive, the round-shouldered figure erect and full-chested? The boy who at home, unheeding the gentle maternal protest, varies his rising hour indefinitely, breakfastward at the military school, springs from his bed at the first note of the revelry, and dresses as though the house were on fire. Yes, the boy whose mother picked up his things for him at home is now his own chambermaid. He makes his bed, sweeps his floor, keeps his furniture innocent of dust, keeps everything in its place. The boy who is accustomed to argue indefinitely with parental authority now obeys without question. Or delay. He obeys the commands of the smallest and most youthful corporal. The boy who at home thought it looked stuck up to stand and walk straight and slouched disfiguringly goes about now with his head up, his chin in, his chest out, and his stomach sucked up, his figure straight and well poised, and a goodly sight to see. Yes, the military method, however, to be effective, must be real. There must be no sham about it. There must not be any dilution, nor modification. The military schools that have succeeded best are those that have been the strictest and have trained their cadets in their military work as earnestly and exactingly as if the making of soldiers was the end in view and not simply a means. The mere nattiness and glitter of the uniform can appeal only to the unworthy traits. If it is to appeal to the best there is in a boy, the uniform must stand for something more than a mere tickler of pride or fancy. The uniforms of the best military schools are eloquent of prompt and unquestioning obedience, of system and order, of setting up exercises that square the shoulders and expand the chest, of drills with every detail accurately hammered out, of days of early rising and early to bed, and of wholesome living, and of many other things which must of necessity exercise on the cadet's afterlife an important and lasting influence. And not only must the military system, if it is to create the desired esprit de corps, be thorough and businesslike, but if it is to keep the cadet's interest from lagging, it must also have the spice of variety. For it must be remembered that the cadet of the private military academy has not, in most instances, the incentive of a soldier's career ahead of him, but must gain his incentive solely from the temporary interest aroused by the military features of the school itself. There you go. How would you like to have that laid on you? Now, I'll give you a listen, I'd award you 10 fig leggies with brass palm. Additional dangles, believe me, for if you could identify where that came from, what that is. It's fantastic. Did you really listen to that? Really? Boy, I haven't read anything in a long time that has shown how unbelievably and dramatically times have changed, man, from one end of the century to the next. I mean, spectacularly. Well, I'll tell you what that was. No way you could guess what it was. No way. No conceivable way. That was an editorial in Scientific American. Did you ever read Scientific American? You know, you have, Jerry. I'm sure you have. It's a famous magazine, you know, with the birds and the bees and a story about, they always have a big thing about the ocean floor and stuff like a rare warbler discovered in South America, that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, it's a great magazine, really. But that was an editorial in Scientific American. And if you care to look it up, it's probably on record somewhere. And the only hooker in the whole story is that that was an editorial in the magazine, Scientific American, of Saturday, March 4th, 1905. I mean, they really, really laid on the line, you know. The whole military thing going full blast, man. More than that, it was you couldn't conceivably get away with writing a thing like that. Not that there's, and I'm not taking an anti-defense stance or anything like that, but the whole idea of treating a military thing is a fantastic, a great, groovy thing that can happen to you is a totally different scene than today. And you know, a funny thing, I read this thing, see, somebody sent me this old Scientific American, And it looks like a newspaper, actually. It doesn't look like a magazine. I don't know when they must have... You know, it's a magazine now, and it's a beautiful one, too. If you ever get a chance to look at it, it's a great magazine. But back in those days, in 1905, when this one was published, this magazine, it looked like a newspaper, really, kind of like a tabloid newspaper on slick paper. And the lead story, incidentally, pictures on the cover there, lead story, it shows a guy, it says... View of a modern prospecting expedition in the Rocky Mountains, showing the method of packing the supplies and other equipment. It was the modern methods of gold prospecting, 1905. But it looks like the modern methods consist of a long line of donkeys with two guys with picks and shovels on their backs. it's kind of a great magazine, but I read that thing home. Oh, man. I'll tell you, you're listening to a guy that one time, I mean, there's two experiences I had in my life. I mean that this thing brought up. I mean I don't want to bother anybody tonight with traumatic experiences that you might have had. But have you ever did you hear the note about the students protesting about failing an exam in math, the striking exam? Well, you can't imagine anybody in 1905. Striking because they had a bad math exam. Forget it. Well, I want to tell you, I'll never forget. Did you ever fail an exam? Did you, Jerry? You did? You mean all three of us have failed exams? Well, I'm glad to see that. Join the club. I only say this, and I, and I, I, I can only speak from experience here in this case. I have no psychological official textbook reference to back it up with, but I can tell you this, that a guy who has never failed an exam, and there are many guys probably are like that, a guy who has never failed an exam does not appreciate the full ramifications of an examination. You agree with that? In other words, failure could teach you a hell of a lot more than success. Ooh. And how? As Vita Blue is finding out. oh, yes. It can shake you down to your foundations. And I'm going to tell you, hearing about those students, you know, walking out and protesting about the exam, I remember a traumatic experience that happened to me in summer school. Did you ever take summer school? Once. That's right, once. Well, summer school is a special phenomenon. It's totally different from, you know, from regular school. Anybody who's ever gone to summer school can tell you that summer school is, the whole aura is different about it. It's a totally different, the mystique, the feeling of summer school. First of all, most people are not in school to begin with. And that gives it a whole different flavor right there. The halls are about 90% empty, you know. And now there's two kinds of guys that go to summer school. There are the beavers and the clods. They go for different reasons. The beavers and the clods. Which reminds me, this is WOR New York. I don't know, no connection. No. I just looking up the clock. Hi, George. Sorry, Mr. Brown. Hey, George. Well, if the shoe fits, by God. That's what I got to say. Nevertheless, that sneaky feeling of walking into a school on a bright summer afternoon or morning with the sun hanging over and the sound of tennis balls in the distance, the sound of birds singing, and the sound of happy non-victims on their way to the beach doing all the groovy stuff. As you walk into school, it's 10 a.m., it is summertime, and you're there for one of two reasons. Either you're one of the beavers, the beaver type is going there because you pick up an extra credit in history, once you pick up a few credit hours in social sciences, this is a beaver. I did not know many of that type, except only to see them once in a while at a far distance with their thick glasses and their worried expression and their heavy load of books. That was another crowd. Now, I have to admit, I belonged to the other group, the clod types. Now, I took summer school on, what it amounted to was bad advice from my advisor. I hadn't failed anything. See, that's the worst part of the story. Everything was cool. It was after my freshman year. And about 2 days before the end of school, Miss Snyder called me and about three other kids up to the front of the class. She was our advisor, see. And she said, I'd like to suggest that you four pupils investigate the possibility of taking a few courses in summer, the summer school. And I think not only would you find that you'd enjoy it, because after all, you wouldn't do much anyway in summertime, but I think perhaps you'll find that the extra credits wouldn't hurt. Well, you know, I thought about it, and I don't know what made me do it. Even to this day, I can't understand why I committed such an obvious act of mental harakiri. I mean, why? I think most of us know. I have a theory that I'm going to lay on you, and that is that most of us walk willingly. Nay, we walk happily to the guillotine. We walk with a song on our lips, you know. Well, nevertheless, I am tromping away, see, and I go home, and it's summertime. It's great, you know. I my first couple of days out of school, just fantastic. And I remember I'm sitting in the kitchen, see, eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Got my fielder's mitt, you know, the whole bit. I've been out knocking out fly balls with Schwartz and the Flick and Bruner. And I said to my mother, I says, I think I'm going to go down to school tomorrow. And she said, what? I said, I'm going down to school tomorrow. She says, what for? I said, I think I'm going to take some summer school. She says, why? I said, well, I just think I may. And she says, well, that's kind of nice. I'm glad to hear that. You know, mothers tend to like that kind of stuff. I don't know why, but they do, see. So, anyway, the next morning, I go down to school, high school, and I go on a bus, you know, the whole scene. I get out there, and it was very different. It looked different. It actually looks different in the summertime. And it's kind of pregnant and rich with promise. And there's nobody around. And I walk into the halls. It's quiet. You were supposed to go down to one of the... Actually, we have a little small auditorium in these little lecture rooms. You're supposed to go down there. That's where you're registered for summer school. They had a big sign that says register that way. So I wander on down the halls. And at that point, I began to have misgivings. Because it was, you know, it's school. I could smell the lockers and I could smell the... You know, it's school, see? And I'm walking down to this big, long hall where the lecture was held, and I turn in, and I go into the door, and there's a lot of kids sitting around in there, and they're filling out forms and all that, and then I see, my God, it was Kismet. Eileen Akers is sitting there right in front of the desk writing out one of the forms. Well, now, I had had my eye on Eileen Akers throughout at least three semesters, you know, and you know, there she was, see, that I don't, so I walk over casually past the desk, and I say, hi. She looks up and says, hello. So, hi, you taking summer school? She says, yes, I'm taking summer school. I said, what are you taking? Yeah, I'm planning. Whatever she's taking, I'm going to write out the thing. See, she says, well, I'm taking American history. I said, oh, American history. Oh, very interesting. That's a coincidence, too, Eileen. I thought I'd take a little American history myself. She says, oh, how nice. Are you going to sign up for Miss Breifogel? I said, well, I was kind of thinking of Mr. Davis, but I don't know. I'll see. Well, I sat down at the desk there with my form, and I filled out the form, and I wrote it right clear and neat. Walked right into the guillotine without even knowing or questioning. American History 3. Miss D.A. Breifogel, room 202. I also signed up for another course, which was a little more fun, swimming. You could sign up for swimming. So, you know, it was kind of great to take swimming in the summertime. Every summer you go there and you learn how to do a backhand. It just worked terrific, see? So I signed up. You get three credit hours for it, too, not only that. So I signed up for swimming and I signed up for American history. Well, the following day, the first classes began, and I sat down in my seat in America. Kind of interesting, too, because we're only about 15 or 20 kids in a class, and I'm used to big classes, you know, about 35, 40 kids in a class, and it's summertime. Well, I sat there and listened to the lecture, Miss Breifogel talking away up in the front. She had one of these drawing voices, the kind of talk like, always talking to your nose, and she says, well, we're going to begin now with chapter 3. I wish all of you to read chapter 3 by tomorrow afternoon. And chapter 3, you know, this is about the origins and the economic ramifications of the Civil War. Now, if there are any questions before the class begins, come in 10 minutes early. I'd be glad to answer. Oh, yeah, she said that droning kind of voice. And it's warm. Oh, God, it was beautiful. You could smell the trees out there. And you could hear the sound. And this has always been, to me, one of the most sensuous sounds of all. The sound of tennis balls in the middle distance. Did you have a great feeling when you hear the sound of tennis balls going, dunk, 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 dunk? You know that sound? Dunk, dunk, dunk. Then there's a long pause, and you hear a little talk, and then dunk, 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 ding, bong. It bounces off the chicken wire, and dunk, dunk. Then you'd hear a net ball, dunk, you know, into a net, ding, dunk. God, I'm sitting here in that American history class, and of course, it was a feckless dream about Eileen Akers. She was no friendlier in the summer semester than she was in the winter semester, which is to say, she didn't even hardly recognize my existence. She's sitting up there in the front, you know, and I'm just sort of casually lounging back, because you can't get, I couldn't get myself serious about school in the summertime. That's the problem. I hear boom, boom. I hear the sound of that tennis ball. And then you can hear voices coming in from the streets outside. It's summertime, you know. And you hear just casual voices. You smell that green grass. And somebody was cutting the lawn. It is, you know, the machine out there, the lawnmower. And you smell that grass, that fresh-cut grass. This is not conducive, believe me, to studying about the panic of 1807. It just does not bring the roses to the cheeks of our major historians. Not that anything could. So I'm sitting there just drifting away, enjoying it. And history is a kind of a, you know, kind of a course that you don't really have to concentrate. Not like trigonometry, you know, not like chemistry, that kind of stuff. And Miss Breyfogle's voice is droning, and the questions and answers and the endless discussions. And I kind of liked it. It was a soft, warm, drowsy, easy, soporific way to spend the morning, about an hour and a half. And I had that warm feeling inside of me that I was getting credit hours for it. And it was kind of great. See, well, then, after the American history class, the bell would honk, and you know they had it goes off in the halls, but it echoed. It's the first time I recognized that it echoed, because nobody out there. Yeah, you echo up and down the hall, you know. It was kind of pleasant. It was almost a feeling like, have you ever gone into somebody's house or some place that is usually has other people in it, and you're sneaking around in it all by yourself? The feeling of privacy, and almost like being illicit, like you're sneaking around. You know, you shouldn't be doing it. And so it was kind of soft and warm. And I enjoyed it immensely. I can't imagine, you know, me doing it again, but I enjoyed this feeling. It was just so great and warm. And I walked out into the hall and walked casually down. The swimming pools, of course, were in the basement. We had the basement of the school. So, I've got my shorts on. I casually walked down. And, oh, kind of, yeah, just great. And I get down to the lower level. I could smell a swimming pool. Now, you know how a swimming pool smells, you know, the chlorine water and all that stuff. But our lower level of our school always had this real strong smell of fresh water, of like a pool, a gymnasium. And I walked down to pool A. We had two big pools, one A, one B. And they used to have one for girls and one for boys, the way it worked. And I casually walk on down to pool A. And yeah, sure, I loved it. And you really learn how to swim. It was a great... great thing. So I'm, you know, cooling around the pool, then I climb out, and now it's time to go in, you get dressed, you know, and they hand out the towels, and walk through this chlorine again, your feet, you know, and take a shower, and go out into the halls. Oh, a great feeling, seeing it's warm in the hall. I go out up the steps. Now I'm through with summer school, see? I've had my two classes. I took swimming, and I took my American history. So now it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I get out on the street and I can smell the grass. I was living in a fool's paradise. Fool's paradise. Well, I continued to go to school now for at least 3 weeks. Well, one day I'm sitting back, taking it very easy, casually lounging. Ah, it's so kind. Yeah, it's so great. But then that day that Miss Breyfogle announced in her monotone voice that we were going to have an examination that was to be held that Friday. This was on a Wednesday. And that we would do well to review the work we had had up to now, because we are going to have a comprehensive examination. Well, now, I don't know what this is about exams. You know, I am a good exam taker. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Some people are adept at taking exams. Now, that doesn't mean they're necessarily good scholars. They've got the exam mind. You know what is it, the exam mind? Somehow your mind zeroes in. You have a sixth sense that goes off when you're skimming through a book as to what they're going to ask you. And furthermore, you have the mind, you have the type of mind that can retain these irrelevant facts, which you will be asked, just long enough to pass the exam. A truly good exam taker peaks at about 3 minutes before the time the exam is actually being taken. He reaches his peak. You agree? Now, you come up to him an hour and a half after the exam and ask him the same questions, and he doesn't know what the hell it's about. A true exam taker concentrates on passing the exam, not on learning the stuff, right? So, I'd always been good at this. So I figured, well, there's no problem here. So for the next couple of days, in fact, even in the swimming pool after I got dressed, I sat around a while. I skimmed through the history book, first time I'd actually looked at it. I skimmed through the history book. A history workbook. One of these things with the blue covers, you know, history workbook, American History 3. So I skimmed through this thing, and I said, well, you know, it's not so bad. And the next day, at breakfast time, while I'm getting ready to eat my Wheaties, I skimmed through it again, no problem. And so that afternoon passed in beautiful pastoral peace. Well, the next day, which was Friday, dawned a beautiful, beautiful summer day. It is on such days, I might add, that I firmly come to believe that most disasters are visited upon men. A beautiful day. I was mousetrapped. The sky was blue. The clouds were white and fluffy. And I had not a fear in the world. That guillotine was coming to me closer and closer, and I, like all true victims, was marching with head held high, picking up my knees, keeping my gut straight. It's a little march music there. I would like to salute. Tonight, I would like to salute all the victims who marched to the guillotine with their guts held in. Yes, head held high, eyes sparkling, marching forward. And that basket is just waiting for your head. Just wait. The sun is gleaming on the blade. Get out of here. Upward and onward we shall go. I'm not afraid of the scaffold, not afraid of the guillotine. Bring on the firing squad, I'm ready. I'm marching upward, onward. Yes, that is the litany of the victim. Not bad, was it? That's kind of good. So anyway, I would say the class was 4 minutes old when I realized it was like, I can't describe the experience except to use a medical analogy. It was like my entire body had been injected with double strength Novocaine. There were 10 questions, essay type questions. I did not recognize a single one of them. There are ways to fake it. Fake an essay question, but I didn't even recognize the subject, the topic, or the reference of any one of the 10. Well, I sat there for about 5 minutes. There was no way to fake my way out of it because it was a big classroom and there were only about 15 of us, and we were sitting 5-10 feet apart. And I had this little blue book that I was supposed to put the answers in. You know, those little blue books? Oh, God, some nights I wake up dreaming of those little blue books. There's nothing I could do. I just took my book up and I said, I'm through. Miss Bryfogle, she says, oh, are you through? She thought I was, you know, one of the fantastic students. Here, I am through already. There have been 5 minutes of the class. I said, yes, I'm through, Miss Bryfogle. And I handed her the book. Well, you haven't put anything in it. That's what I said, so funny. Well, I'll have to fail you. I said, well, that's right. That's right. She said, well, son. And I went out into the hall and down to the swimming pool. Well, I'm swimming around for about 10 minutes when the coach called me out of the water. He says, say, I just got a call from the office. I said, from the office? He said, yes, they say that you failed history. I said, well, yeah. He said, well, then you can't take swimming. Said, you know, if you fail a course in summer school, they just drop you out of summer school. Sure, we can't swim. Said, no, all right. Well, I put on my tennis shoes, walked through the bath of chloroform without even taking my laces out.
and out into the street. Never to go back to summer school ever. But I can only tell you this. The failure once tasted. The taste of that rotten apple core way down at the bottom where even the worms don't eat is never forgotten. Once you stuck a fork in your salad and come up with a tomato worm, you don't forget it easy. And so tonight I would like to salute all the failures out there and all the guys that are going to summer school. It's kind of great in some ways, but look out. Yeah.